And let us move this to a place that also needs to be talked about, the United Nations. The president of the UN for this month is China. And they've been trying to help out with the Palestine matter. And it's been 11, 12, 13 days. The US, every time the Security Council wants to issue what I would call an anodyne statement, not that I'm sure I know what the word anodyne means, but it's basic. It is the boilerplate statement that got to be ceasefire, parties have to adhere to certain agreements, and the people of Palestine have to be able to come and go in Gaza, and there shouldn't be takeover properties of Palestinian properties in Jerusalem and all that. So China is there, Russia, Greece, and they can't get anything done because U.S. is vetoing. And so we have a clear idea of what is causing this. The U.S. thinks that the issue, and now we're talking about Palestine, the issue is that this is something that President Biden has to be the one to solve. President Biden has to say, be able to say, I picked up the phone, I spoke with Premier Netanyahu, and then I talked to so-and-so, and I've solved it. This is all this is about. Nobody else gets a look in. I have the UN Security, the data on UN Security Council members on calling for Israel-Palestine ceasefire. And this is at the Security Council. I'm not talking about what the U.S. did on the sideline, outside the UN. So the supporters of the UN Security Council members on calling for Israel-Palestine ceasefire, the supporters, China, Estonia, France, India, Ireland, Kenya, Mexico, Niger, Norway, Russia, St. Vincent, Tunisia, United Kingdom, Vietnam, supported, these are the Security Council members, supported a call, opposed United States. So this is a declaration, United States, Victoria Day. This is a Victorian, like, we're not amused. We are the ones. We have the scepter, the holy scepter. And we have 800 military bases around the world. And there is a crisis in a place where, since 1948, it's been agreed that the Palestinians have rights. But instead of that being realized, it's just been mumbo jumbo and mayhem, with France, United States, and UK being the principal supporters of the Israeli government. And there have been many, many agreements, all of them gone up in smoke. And this United Nations Security Council vote really shows what's at the bottom of this. This is US policy. It is not Israeli policy, by the way. You know, Israelis get billions in aid yearly from the United States. The United States isn't doing that for the fun. They know what they are getting from this deal. And also, this is one place where they want it clear that the views of the other nations of the world don't count. After, you could take them all, 194 to 1, and that's okay. And there have been votes of 194 to 1 on Cuba. Also, by the way, the annual resolution condemning Nazism, the ideology of Nazism, after all, the UN was formed on the body, the remains, if there were any, of Nazism, and that ideology has raised its head again around the world. And so every year there's a resolution saying that all the member states have to fight Nazism. The United States votes against that. Sometimes they're not alone. Ukraine joined them, I think, the last time. So this, by the way, is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT, 89.5 FM. Remind you that CIUT is still working on raising a goal of 100,000. And we hope you'll help us out. We've gotten a long way toward it. And we can continue to raise funds, I'm happy to say, for the great station, CIUT. And you can donate by just going to CIUT.FM. And my understanding is we're close to the goal of, or close again, at least, on the goal, 100,000. And we hope the listeners of the Taylor Report are continuing to give toward that effort. And again, okay, with the Taylor Report, then I want to do a little background on this, further on Palestine. And the sort of the new discussions we're having, Bernie Sanders and OAC, is that it? The Congresswoman from New York, she introduced a resolution in the United States Congress, and Bernie Sanders has introduced a resolution in the United States Senate, saying that there should be an ending, blocking the latest shipment worth $764 million, whatever it is, that was due to go, or is due to go, and will go, don't worry. It's going to go for sure. But there are resolutions saying it should not. You won't see any of that in the Canadian Parliament, by the way. You can relax. Not going to happen. But you give credit to Bernie Sanders and to the Congresswoman, and there are others, I don't know their names, but there are significant personalities in the United States Congress who are starting to say very principled things. I noticed that OAC is using the term apartheid in talking about Israel. A year, 2 years ago, you would not have heard this. So as Bob Dylan said in his song, something is going on and you don't know, you don't understand, do you, Mr. Jones? Well, of course there's something going on. Struggle of Palestine, for Palestinian rights, is as old as the decision to create two states, the Palestinian and Israeli. And we had a discussion today where people say, well, if it weren't for Hamas, maybe we could get this done. Well, Hamas is a very late phenomenon. Hamas has come on the scene. I couldn't date their origins, but it is, there have been a number of Palestinian organizations. This idea that you can reduce it to a group like this and then say, oh, you have to do something about them. No, that's not gonna get it. Until you talk about what is at issue and how we came to be here, the notion that you can do it Joe Biden style and speak to a leader somewhere and get anything solved, that's not, you actually have to say, do we actually believe in the right of nations and self-determination? Do we believe that people have a right to, when in particular you have disputed territory, have the people of that territory get the final say on who they are and what kind of state system they're going to have. The colonial arrangement, which we have inherited, is what we have to address. And there were those who thought that they could get around this problem by corralling the great powers, Russia, particularly under Yeltsin, when they thought, okay, now we can muscle Yeltsin and we can start to do deals, and this will be handled out of London and Washington, and the Palestinians will just have to accept what we tell them to accept, and we will give money to those Palestinians who help us, and we'll starve the other ones, and basically continue what is a colonial approach to the issue. Going back to this, just to show, and I think I can even tie in the China question again with this. When World War I ended, the people began to appear from underdeveloped countries and underdeveloped colonized peoples. On this show, we spoke to an author talking about Ho Chi Minh. Ho Chi Minh attended the Versailles meetings and spoke up for the Vietnamese people. And it was the beginning of recognition that the people of the world were not the subjects of the French and American and British governments, Italian and others, that they had rights, and their national states, the people should, there should be a decolonizing process. It was that concept was in the air. It didn't reach fruition, but it was in the air, because people who think democratically and respect others know that you cannot impose on another people, that you have to have a mutual respect and a commitment to a peaceful, democratic way of solving problems. It can't be by fiat and diktat. But that has been, you tell that to Five Eyes. Five Eyes thinks it is by diktat. And in the case, China is a good example. We've spoken about it before on the Taylor Report. The German colonizers had a major port and in China and region that they had under their control. But because they were in a war with US and France and lost, they had to give it up. And there was a Chinese government. However, the Woodrow Wilson and the others agreed to give that part of China, the very rich portion of China, to Japan, because Japan had helped them out in the war. So they got to colonize, take over a German colony as a reward. Similarly, and in that case, you see the Chinese registered their opposition, and they were ignored. By the way, the Japanese who were given that then said that now that they were going to be a member of the League of Nations and all that, the League ought to have a rule that said that all nations were equal, all in suggesting race and ethnicity. And they, as Japan, you know, they should be equal with others, because there were laws in countries around them saying no Japanese. So that was vetoed, because Australia said, no way, impossible. No, there's no racial equality. Australia is white, and so forget it. And so what did they decide to do, the victorious powers of World War I? They said, no to Japan, you don't get to be equal. We're giving you a piece of China, I mean, what do you want? I think that was sort of the way they thought about it. This is a similar idea of how the matter in Palestine is viewed. We'll decide. Biden will decide. The UK will decide. And then we'll impose it. a very important thing happened, and it's very apropos of, I noticed a number of writers. I would urge you to go to sites like Charmaine Nawani, the gentleman called the Angry Arab, and others are all now saying that they notice there is something very significant that's happened, and they're trying to see how much of a sea change is taking place in the Middle East, and to explain its origins. And so they're talking about where the strength of this resistance has come from, it's very apropos, or very interesting, because I would say, and the specter of Iran is raised. Not everybody talks about Iran in this. The U.S. kind of is toning it down at the moment because they're not sure what to make of the situation either. They're trying to handle the nomenclature. They're trying to get everybody to use the same language. Theirs. I would just say, something happened in 1979. Ayatollah Khomeini of Iran emerged as the voice of a revolution that overthrew the Shah. It's not, people don't like to talk about it in the West, but in fact, it was one of the most powerful revolutions in history. It truly was a widespread, deep, it was wide and deep, and it was called the Islamic Revolution. These are just words we tack on to the front of the thing. But at the time this happened, there was a discussions going on, led by the United States, to arrange a settlement of matters in the Middle East to their own liking. And Khomeini was created a problem for the West because he wasn't a political scientist. He hadn't ever gone to any of the better schools in the American East or visited the British diplomats. So he said, I don't understand it. This is an occupied, colonial settler state, rather like South Africa. He said, but at the time, South Africa was still apartheid. And Khomeini said, both of them, those states, have to be transformed into governments of their people. That's been turned into all kinds of wild language by people who are unhappy with the Ayatollah Khomeini. But he simply said it, and he created a prairie fire. And I noticed that very few people are talking about it. But in fact, what he said was, the Palestinian people actually don't have to wait for or take instructions from anybody. They have a right to fight for their national self-determination. And all nations of the earth should agree that there has to be a popular expression of the will of the people of Palestine, whatever their ethnicity and whatever their religion. And that breakthrough psychological had tremendous impact, whatever you might know or think about the Islamic Revolution. It transformed discussion throughout the Middle East, and something to keep in mind when you're watching this. This is Phil Taylor for the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. Go CIUT.fm and donate, and we'll see you next week.